All right. Let's open up tonight to 1 Samuel chapter 16 to begin. Then we're going to head to Proverbs and stay there, I think, most of the night. But 1 Samuel chapter 16. And so Saul has developed this problem with the evil spirit from the Lord, and they're seeking some sort of reprieve from that. And so they seek a man that can play well from a harp. And down in verse 18, one of the servants answers this. Then answered one of the servants and said, "Behold, I have seen the son of Jesse, the Bethlehemite, that is a cunning, is cunning in playing, a mighty valiant man, a man of war, and prudent in matters, and a comely person, and the Lord is with it." Let's bow our heads there and pray. Now, Lord, we ask your guidance here tonight in some things, and there's something said here, Father, that clicked for me this week. I pray that you'll help us to contemplate these things, Father. We know that a false balance is an abomination to the Lord, and we know that you seek some attributes, Lord, in men that aren't always very flashy, and I pray you might illuminate something like that tonight for us. Father, you don't require that any of us have extraordinary talent or extraordinary ability, but the exercise of character goes a long way. So I pray you'd elevate something tonight that you would have us see, and I pray these things in Jesus' name. Amen. All right, so here is this one fellow's estimation of David's qualities. It's the qualities that he named before him. And of course, they're looking for a guy cunning in playing the harp. And David is cunning in playing, and so he can make the thing talk and probably sings well as well. But on top of it, notice it says there in the passage, it says he's also a valiant man. So as well as being a musician, he is bold as a lion and brave as one. And so, if that... those two things may not usually go together, but it did in this case. It said further that he was also a man of war. So not just valiant, not just brave, but I mean he is a man of war. He is a warrior. And so you all know that in time he wound up training Saul's mighty men, and they received him well. So he really must have had something. Now it said furthermore, in case those things weren't enough, it says down in verse 18 at the end that he was also a comely person. So on top of it all, he was good looking. Well, that goes a long way, as you can see. That's supposed to be a joke, whatever. And then on top of that, it goes on to say at the end, it says, "And if that's not enough, and the Lord is with him." So he's a fighter, brave as a lion, plays well, sings well, good looking, and on top of it, he's spiritual. There's one other thing that's mentioned that, you know, all those other attributes are, you know, really sound good. That's the kind of guy you want, right? But it says also that he's prudent in matters. Prudent in matters. That one's kind of a wah-wah-wah because, you know, good-looking, a valiant man, a mighty man, a warrior, all those kind of things, plays the harp like crazy, sings great, all those things. And then, oh, by the way, he's prudent. Well, I got thinking about that, and then I noticed, if you will, Isaiah 52 real fast. Isaiah 52. David's prudent. Then in Isaiah 52, verse 13, "Behold, my servant shall deal prudently. He shall be exalted and extolled and be very high," in case you have any questions about who that was. "As many were a stonied at thee, his visage was so marred more than any man, his form more than the sons of men. So shall he sprinkle many nations, the kings shall shut their mouths at him, for that which had not been told them shall they see, and that which they had not heard shall they consider." Well, that prudent man is Jesus Christ. Okay, look, I guess what I'm getting at here tonight is, you know, that quality of prudence I'm going to talk to you about prudence tonight. I'm going to talk to you about the prudent. It's one of those qualities that's not real flashy. In our lands of the day, it's just not very sexy. But the Lord mentioned that in the case of both David and Jesus Christ. It's not the first thing that I would think about if I were thinking of David. I would, you know, come up with another couple of qualities first, for sure. In fact, it's not the first quality I'd come up with in my own mind, I guess, left to myself, of Jesus Christ. I'd come up with a couple of qualities other than that. But the Lord made sure to tell you that both those men were prudent. They had prudence. And the Lord rates that very highly. In Proverbs, the book of wisdom, actually prudence shows up, the prudent shows up 13 times. And maybe it means something that it's 13 times, I'm not quite sure. But I'm going to take you back to Proverbs here. We're going to look at prudence tonight. Like I said, there's probably flashier sermons than this, but this got under my skin a little bit here this week. And just a couple things to start with that I hadn't seen before, to be honest with you. Look in Proverbs chapter 18, if you will, go down to verse 15. Proverbs chapter 18 and verse 15. Where it says in verse 15, "The heart of the prudent getteth knowledge. The ear of the wise seeketh knowledge." Well, both of those halves of the verse, both those objects are positive things. The heart of the prudent getteth knowledge, the ear of the wise seeketh knowledge. I hope you can see there pretty quick that one of those things gets knowledge and the other just seeks it. Now, I'm not going to denounce by any stretch of the imagination wisdom tonight. You know how highly the Lord elevates wisdom. We're given Jesus Christ. He's made wisdom unto us. So I'm not going to, you know, denounce wisdom by any stretch of the imagination, but I just take note in verse 15 that the heart of the prudent getteth knowledge and the ear of the wise seeketh knowledge. There's a difference between those two things. One of them gets it and the other just seeks it. Now, when I thought about that, I thought about the passage we went to this morning in 2 Timothy 3, where it's talking about Jannes and Jambres and how there are some that are ever learning and never able to come to the knowledge of the truth. And there are some that heap to themselves teachers, having itching ears. They want knowledge. They want wisdom. The wise man here in verse 15, "The ear of the wise seeketh knowledge, but the heart of the prudent getteth it." Jannes and Jambres, among the other men of our generation that are like them, they seek it. They're always learning, but they never are able to come to the knowledge of the truth. And it kind of works like this, I think. There are lots of wise folks that speak wisely, I suppose. And, you know, when you talk to them about stuff, they're conversant in it, and it's no problem. They seem to understand the concepts of it. Sometimes you can start a sentence and they can finish the sentence correctly. But you know, when it can, strangely enough, when it comes to, they may have the answers, but they don't seem to ever put it in action. Well, the Bible says there in verse 15 that the heart of the prudent getteth knowledge, but the ear of the wise seeketh knowledge. Well, I think that you can see that the advantage would be to get it, not just seek it. And so, you know, there's that. Look over, if you will, and that then led me to this. Proverbs 8. What I'm saying here, and well, you'll see in a second, is that there's something to be said for prudence, even above wisdom. And this is not a denunciation in any way, shape, or form of wisdom. You know how highly the Lord elevates wisdom. In fact, we'll see something in just a second. But in Proverbs chapter 8, just lay something out. This whole passage is about wisdom. Look in verse 1. "Doth not wisdom cry, and understanding put forth her voice?" Wisdom is projected as a woman in more than one place. "She standeth," verse 2, "at the top of the high places," by the way, the places of the paths. "She crieth in the gates as a she." She is a woman. She's personified as a woman. And down in verse 6, "Here, for I will speak of excellent things, and the opening of my lips shall be right things." So, right things, excellent things. She's concerned about right things. She's concerned about the truth. My mouth shall speak truth. Wickedness is an abomination to my lips. It goes on to say, down in verse 8, all the words of my mouth are in righteousness. There is nothing froward or perverse in them. This woman, wisdom, is right and true and does not speak any abominable things. They are all plain to him, verse 9, that understandeth, right to them that find knowledge. And again, to elevate how high the Lord thinks of wisdom, notice verse 11, for wisdom now is better than rubies, and all the things that may be desired are not to be compared to it. Well, like I said before, I can flat sure desire some things, and all the things that I can desire are not to be compared to wisdom. So wisdom is a good thing. And yet it said back there in Proverbs chapter 18 that the prudent getteth knowledge, and the wise man seeketh it. But the prudent man getteth it. Then I saw this. I hadn't seen this before. Verse 12. I, wisdom, dwell with prudence. Now, you've seen that wisdom is personified as a woman there, a righteous woman, a good woman, a woman that doesn't speak abomination, a woman that's interested in the truth. Well, she says, I, wisdom, dwell with prudence. I wonder if prudence is a guy. Well, if prudence is a guy, then she's married to prudence. She dwells with prudence, right? If she's right, and then if she abides with prudence and prudence is a guy, then she's married to him. If she's married to him, then maybe prudence is a superior quality than even wisdom. Maybe prudence may direct and rule, if you will, over wisdom. Prudence may regulate wisdom. Prudence may direct and lead wisdom. Kind of like a husband, you know. She says, I'm a woman, I'm a righteous woman, I'm a truth-loving woman. In verse 12, I, wisdom, dwell with prudence and find out knowledge of witty inventions. I'm presenting here to you the idea that, you know, this quality was elevated in the Lord's sight in David, and then again in Jesus Christ. And the prudent man gets knowledge, the wise man seeks it. Well, getting it's better than seeking it. And here you have wisdom being dwelling with prudence, in some ways being subject to prudence. So I want to present to you the prudent tonight with those things in mind. I'm not trying to be wild and get some new doctrine going or anything like that. I'm not denouncing wisdom at all. I'm just saying I've known some folks that are wise enough in this world and seem to have all the answers. And when they speak, they can say the right things, but they're still a bit of a distance between what they say and how they live, right? Maybe the difference is prudence. Let me take you to Proverbs 12, and I have a few stops for you here tonight, and just want to talk about the prudent and prudence. It says there in Proverbs 12, and these are just pretty simple things that are connected with prudence. It gives a prudent man the idea of some of the characteristics he's supposed to, you know, manifest. And maybe they are, you know, consistent entirely with wisdom, but apparently prudence has something of a regulatory effect on wisdom. Look in Proverbs chapter 12, go down, if you will, to verse 16. 12, 16, just think about these things for me. Proverbs 12, and verse 16, a fool's wrath is presently known, but a prudent man covereth shame. It says there a prudent man covers some things. Now, I can understand that openness and transparency has its place and can be a good attribute in somebody that, you know, under certain circumstances, but again, you know, there's a right balance and a wrong balance, and you can see that somebody who takes, who's transparent beyond what he should be, so that he's manifesting attributes that were better hid in himself, you could see maybe there the guy needs a little more prudence, right? Well, it says there in chapter 12, verse 16, it says, a fool's wrath is presently known. That is, a fool loses his temper in his garage and kicks something and cuts his foot, breaks a toe, flings something and it bounces back off of something and hits him in the head. And meanwhile, the neighbor's looking, standing across the road in his driveway going, and shaking his head. Because the fool is just presently known. The fool is making a fool of himself. It says there in verse 16, the fool's wrath is presently known. But it says there that a prudent man covereth shame. That is, that fool's display of temper is a shame because of how he's acting. And not just a wise man, because a man can be wise and still and still look like a fool sometimes. But a prudent man recognizes that the neighbor's across the road watching, and he may have just gotten really frustrated and really upset about something, but he needs to go in the house and sit down instead of making this scene in front of the neighborhood. That's prudence. It says there that prudence essentially covers something. In verse 16, a fool's wrath is presently known. Again, some folks, you know, whether it be mad or happy or glad or frustrated or anything else, I mean, it's just bleh. It's just out there. That's not wise. By the way, well, maybe they are wise, but that's not prudent. Because there are some things better covered. And among other things is that for somebody truly prudent, they will cover what should be covered. Right? I'm not talking about hiding your sin or something like that. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about, you know, all of us have failures, and there's no need to make public your stupidity. All of us probably have ill opinions. There's no need for you to shoot your mouth off and show everybody what a fool you are. In fact, it'd be real prudent if you'd shut your mouth, right? Now, down in chapter 12, same chapter, verse 23, there's something else said along these lines. Now, in the first case, verse 16, that is a prudent man covering something about himself. And it's really self-awareness. It's really self-regulation is what it is. So that it doesn't get away from him and he ruins his testimony, ruins perhaps the Lord's testimony for a short time, and proves an embarrassment to his family. A prudent man figures out how to tamp that down and keep it tamped down. Right? Some people are too open. Some people, whatever comes to mind, blah, shut up. That's not prudent. You may have wisdom. Before I can finish certain sentences here, you may already know what I'm going to say because you know it's true. It doesn't mean you're putting it in operation. A prudent man covers shame. His own. Now, look in chapters 12, verse 23. A prudent man concealeth knowledge, but the heart of fools proclaimeth foolishness. Sometimes foolishness is knowledge. It says a prudent man concealeth knowledge, but the heart of the fools proclaimeth foolishness. Somebody's sitting around talking about Hollywood stars. Infidelities and raunchy lives. Well, it may be true, but there's no need to talk about it, right? And the fool shooting off his mouth and running on and on and on about it is not doing anybody any help. In fact, the prudent man probably knows about it as well. Meanwhile, he's sitting there with his trap shut because he's not going to go there. Now, folks, my point is that prudence conceals and covers some things. It conceals, first of all, a man will learn to tamp down his own foolishness. And if he's thinking foolish thoughts, perhaps, and who doesn't, right?
He'll tamp it down to keep it from coming out his stupid mouth. He covers it. It's concealed. As far as knowing something that a fool knows, he may know it better than the fool. Meanwhile, the fool's going to make it public and talk about it. He's going to sit with his mouth shut. That's a prudent man. It's a prudent man. There's an element of self-awareness. It speaks to that. Sometimes I think that folks could use a little more. I'm not trying to be psychological about it, but folks could use a little more self-awareness. For instance, it's a good thing for a young man to learn this. It's a good thing for a young woman to learn this. And it's not that it's not a bad thing for an old man or an old woman to learn this, but some folks just rattle off at the mouth. They don't seem to have an awareness that they've gone too far, they've already said enough, and now they're saying more than should be said. They have no self-control. That is not a prudent man. They may be wise. They may, there's lots of wise folks, wise men that know spiritual things that are gossips, that don't have a problem talking about the brethren, but you should keep your mouth shut. That would be prudent. There's a difference between wisdom and prudence. Prudence would regulate some wisdom. It would guide it. It would escort it. Look in your Bibles, if you would, to Proverbs 25, and the word prudent is not here, I know that. But Proverbs 25, but it is what I'm talking about. Proverbs 25, and go down to verse 28. And once again, he that hath no rule over his own spirit is like a city that is broken down and without walls. A prudent man conceals it. He covers some things. He learns to self-regulate. He learns when he's mad he needs to go calm down, or else he's going to make a fool of himself. He knows that when he has a strong opinion, that there are some times that the opinion should be bitten back and he should bite his tongue. That's a prudent thing. Oftentimes, folks are wise, but they don't have very much prudence. Right? Look, if you will, in Proverbs 10. Proverbs 10. And go down, if you will, to verse 32. The lips of the righteous know what is acceptable. Like I said, men can use, Christians can use, a little more prudence. And know what is acceptable before going too far. Like I said, need to know when enough is said. Need to know that, okay, you said one thing funny, there's no need to spend the rest of the night trying to make us laugh again. You succeeded once, quit trying to turn this into a clown act. Right? Now look, there's a thousand things like this, but the point of fact is that a prudent man covers some things. He conceals things. Part of the concealment is things about his own life that he knows need to be kept under wraps, under control. His mouth, his temper, his selfishness, his proclivity to talk about himself all the time. Some folks don't have any prudence. Blah, 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 blah. And they just talk about themselves, talk about anything, just on and on and on and on. Shut up. We know you're wise. We get it. You know Bible. But you need prudence. Shut up. Right? Thank you very much. Yeah. I knew you were going to like this. One of the definitions for prudence in Webster's is a caution and deliberation, careful of consequences, a sagacity, S-A-G-A-C-I-T-Y. You don't probably use that word very often. I don't. Sagacity, that's an acuteness of discernment. That is, somebody with prudence can see where a conversation's going and starts shutting it down because he doesn't want it, doesn't need it to go there. Right? It's prudence. Now look at something else in Proverbs. That was one thing. Look in Proverbs 13. We'll just progress through a few pages of Scripture here. Proverbs 13. And again, I point out to you from Proverbs 18 that the prudent man gets knowledge. The wise man only seeks it. So there's something to be said for getting it, right? If you get it, as opposed to just seeking it, that's a superior attribute. And so wisdom says, I, wisdom, dwell with prudence. She is
escorted by prudence. Prudence in some way regulates her actions, as noble as she is. Proverbs 13, go down to verse 16. It says there, "Every prudent man dealeth with knowledge, but a fool layeth open his folly." Okay, every prudent man dealeth with knowledge. He deals in facts. But a fool layeth open his folly. A fool doesn't stop with facts. A fool speculates. A fool imagines, insinuates. A fool grows the story. A fool imagines possibilities and theorizes outcomes. The story kind of runs away with the guy that's the fool. He takes counsel of his fears. He lets possibilities run away with him. Now, a prudent man deals in knowledge, but it says there that in verse 16, "But a fool layeth open his folly." Doctrinally, what this would mean would be that a prudent man doesn't make speculation what he does in doctrine. He builds precept upon precept, line upon line, and isn't making wide, broad leaps from one thing to the next, trying to string things together and making a horrible mess. That's prudence. Somebody that has no prudence but still is in the Bible sometimes makes a terrible mess. Replacement theology is somebody that has no prudence. They found some verses that support their position, or what they think is right, but they ignore, 100 verses that say God is not done with Israel, and that Israel and the church are not the same. That's somebody that's off, and he's not prudent. He has Bible knowledge. He may have some wisdom about some things, and may even make sense once in a while, but he has no prudence. It runs away with him. Doctrine runs away with him. I knew a guy one time, and he took Doc's wilder stuff, and then started trying to expand on it. And pretty soon he had a ministry. He was called to baptize fallen angels in the great deep. I don't even know how that works. That's a guy who knows Bible, but has no prudence. Okay? The prudent man's purpose is based on facts. It says there in verse 16, every prudent man dealeth with knowledge. He's not interested in getting off too far into speculation. He's not interested in being carried away by his imagination and other things. His purpose is based on facts. That's why I believe deeply that getting very far off into conspiracy stuff is nonsense, because you wind up in speculation. And furthermore, one thing I've learned about conspiracies is that once you start talking about jet contrails and stuff like that, and black boxes and wearing a tin hat and all this kind of thing, is you never know where the facts stop and nonsense starts. It's one of the things that I've always thought, with the conspiracy stuff, and no matter what conspiracy it is, whether it's our food supply, our water supply, whether Trump's an alien, whether Obama was an alien, whatever, is when you start doing that stuff, sure, you can go get facts, quote-unquote facts, off the internet, but you still don't know what's really true and what's really not. You just have a source is all. And that's the point. That's why I don't believe that political intrigues are wise for a Christian to get off into. I think that you're wise enough just to be left. There's no need for you to worry about whether Donald Trump is the greatest Christian since John Wesley, or whether he is the wickedest man since Nero. Fact of the matter is, he's the president, and the Bible says what it says about people in power, and you should just leave it there. and go about your business, pray for him and all those sort of things, but there's no need for you to get involved in political intrigues and get tied up at the Capitol, and instead of witnessing to somebody or preaching on the street, you wind up dealing with political intrigues. That's not prudent. A prudent man, verse 16, deals with knowledge, with facts. I'm talking here about Bible facts. There's something else. Not only does he deal in facts, not only does he conceal certain things, but there's this in Proverbs chapter 14. Go down to verse 8. The wisdom of the prudent is to understand his way, but the folly of fools is deceit. The wisdom of the prudent is to understand his way, but the folly of fools is to be deceived about what? About his way. Right? Look down in verse 15. This also flows with that. The simple believe every word, but the prudent man looketh well to his going. Now, I'm making his way and his going kind of the same thing there. I'd like to say that the prudent man focuses on his way. Now, I know there's a balance in that. For instance, chapter 14, in fact, of this very same passage, 14:14. You can get preoccupied with it and it can swell up on you and carry you away. I get that. Verse 14, the backslider in heart shall be filled with his own ways. All he can do is think about himself and talk about himself. He's a narcissist. A backslider in heart shall be filled with his own ways, and a good man shall be satisfied from himself. But go on over to chapter 16, verse 2. 16:2. All the ways of a man are clean in his own eyes, but the Lord weigheth the spirits. I tell you, you need to be concerned about your own way. You need to take care of your own business. If you get preoccupied in it, if you get obsessed in it, you can become a narcissist. Nevertheless, it says back there that a prudent man in verse 14:8, the wisdom of the prudent is to understand his way. You need to understand what makes up your way. You need to understand your way. Look in chapter 12, verse 15. 12:15. The way of the fool is right in his own eyes, but he that hearkeneth unto counsel is wise. You need to know what your way is made up of. A fool thinks that his way is the only way. A fool thinks that his own opinion is all that matters. Now, that's not true. Look in chapter 21. Chapter 21. A prudent man puts the right focus on his way. In chapter 21, verse 2. Every way of a man is right in his own eyes, but the Lord pondereth the hearts. So you need to ponder your heart as the Lord ponders your heart. You need to know your heart because your heart directs your way. Look in 21:8. 21:8. The way of man is froward and strange. You should understand for yourself that there's a down at the base part of you, to God, you are froward and strange. And so you need to be aware and beware of that attribute. Look in chapter 18. I'll quit turning so fast here in just a second. Proverbs chapter 18 and go down to verse 17. He that is first in his own cause seemeth just, but his neighbor cometh and searcheth him. Now, you need to be aware of where preoccupation with yourself can lead you. A prudent man does that. A prudent man in chapter 14, verse 8. I'm sorry I didn't have that one memorized, but I wish I did. Proverbs 14:8. The wisdom of the prudent is to understand his way. It's not saying be focused on your way. It's not saying be preoccupied with it. It's to understand it. It's to understand it that if you get preoccupied with yourself, it'll carry you away. You become a self-centered little narcissist. That's not good. But it gives you a proper focus on your way. You remember Simon Peter? What shall this man do? Talking about John. Jesus Christ said, what is that to thee? And the answer is, the lesson is, mind your own business. don't need to worry about John. And there are lots of folks, sometimes folks come up to you, and it seems like they're always leading. They always lead with talk about somebody else, another brother. Why don't you just worry about you? Why don't you just take care of you instead of worrying about what so-and-so is doing or what so-and-so did or why so-and-so is not here or why so-and-so didn't do this right? Why don't you worry about you? There's something else here that I'd like you to see. And look in Proverbs 14, once again, verse 18. What have we said so far? We've said that a prudent man conceals some things, covers some things, that he deals in facts. We have said that he focuses on his way. There's this, Proverbs 14, verse 18. And remember where this comes from now. I mean, a prudent man gets knowledge. A wise man only seeks it. Getting is plainly the wiser thing. Wisdom, as noble as she is, dwells with prudence. If prudence is the male counterpart to the female righteous woman, then he's her husband. That means that he leads, he regulates in some manner, he escorts her in her way. You see what I'm getting at, though? I mean, in a way, although it doesn't get as, it's not as flashy or as well known, it might be that prudence is the superior quality. Lots of people have wisdom. Lots of people have biblical wisdom and knowledge. Not an awful lot of folks know what to do with it. Not a lot of folks are very good at disseminating it and making close judgments about what is right and when it's right. Notice something else here in Proverbs 14, verse 18. The simple inherit folly, but the prudent are crowned with knowledge. Now the simple inherit folly. People talk about generational sins and sins that are kind of inherited. It's kind of a spooky. The number of kids whose fathers and or mothers were booze freaks who wind up drunks themselves. Don't you find it strange? Don't you find it a little spooky that kids that watch their dads beat their moms oftentimes wind up marrying somebody they either beat or beat them? It's downright scary. Same thing is true with drugs. The same thing is true with divorce. Bankruptcy, there are times that, a father who just can't control himself in some area winds up raising a kid that can't control himself in the same area. Now, why does that happen? It's not genetic. It's not. There's not a drunk gene. I'm sorry. There's not a drunk gene. Genetically, we're all sinners, and so genetically, technically, sin is genetic, but it's across the board, right? And when it comes to a proclivity to spend too much money and be stupid with money, well, that's not genetic. Not from the father to the son. Bob was that way, and so little Freddie is that way. That's not how that works. What is that? The fool inherits folly, it says there, verse 18. The simple inherit folly. What is that? Why does the simple inherit folly? Simple inherits folly because he doesn't learn any lessons. Now, what that means is that somebody that's prudent does the opposite. Again, notice the verse 18. The simple inherit folly, but the prudent are crowned with knowledge. That is, put in the same context, the prudent looks at what happened between mom and dad, looks at dad's failings, looks at mom's failings and so on, and he learns from those things and he doesn't repeat them. Why? Because he's prudent.
He watched Dad ruin his life and ruin his marriage, so he doesn't go there. It's a matter of prudence. Meanwhile, the simple inherit folly. It just gets passed on from generation to generation to generation. The prudent then, if we take it from here, learns lessons that his parents, his family, and his friends don't learn. He takes to heart, you know, what a heartbreak some of those situations were, and how he saw Mom in tears all the time and Dad broken and drunk all the time. And so he ain't going there. And so he makes changes. Now, of course, you need to get saved and all those things. But a prudent man doesn't make the mistakes. A prudent man learns lessons that family and friends don't, so he doesn't inherit folly. He doesn't repeat the same mistakes. He makes better decisions. That's a prudent man. You know, there's plenty of wise drunks in the world. When you start reading about philosophy and stuff, and some of those guys were pretty smart about some stuff. Now, they were stupid about others, but they oftentimes didn't make any changes in their lives. They weren't prudent. The prudent man breaks then the habit of bad decisions. So the parents wind up where they wind up sometimes, in bankruptcy or the way they spent money or how they sought jobs and where they went and all those sort of things. And then a lot of times that becomes a generational thing because kids are raised up in the environment. They see it happen. And they, you know, I guess they think, well, Dad did it, so I can do it too. And, you know, maybe I'll break the chain. And they don't break the chain. Now, what needs to happen is different decisions need to be made. Right? The prudent man learns self-control. Dad lost control to the bottle. That's no reason that you should. In fact, that's an excellent reason for you not to. Dad never got his temper under wraps, and so he wound up giving Mom a black eye every 3 or 4 months. She stuck with him, but there's no need for you to do that. Right? A prudent man is crowned with knowledge. A prudent man takes what he learned and does something with it. A prudent man stays in the Bible. Oftentimes the simple doesn't stay in the Bible. Oftentimes, the simple just continues to repeat the same old things that Mom and Dad and Grandma did because that's the way we've done things. That's just the way the Stevens family is instead of making the change. I'd like to say this as well. Notice in chapter 15, verse 5. Chapter 15, verse 5. Okay, so a prudent man covers and conceals certain things. He deals in facts. He focuses on his way. He's crowned with knowledge. And then in chapter 15, verse 5, a fool despiseth his father's instruction, but he that regardeth reproof is prudent. He that regardeth reproof is prudent. Look in Proverbs a few places here. Proverbs 6. Now, I think I said something about this in a recent Sunday night or something, but Proverbs chapter 6, go down to verse 23. For the commandment is a lamp, the law is light, and reproof of instruction are the way of life. I'd like to say that a prudent man regards a reproof. He thinks highly of it. Look in chapter 15, Proverbs 15, and verse 31. Now, like I said, I know that this sermon's not real flashy, but because it's not about something that is flashy. Prudence is just not flashy. But boy, it'll save you a bunch of trouble. Proverbs chapter 15, verse 31. The ear that heareth the reproof of life abideth among the wise. He that refuseth instruction despiseth his own soul, but he that heareth reproof, getteth instruction, getteth understanding. Now, I hope you can see there, and we could show it from other places, that reproof is connected with instruction. There is no real instruction unless there's reproof involved. Now, a prudent man regards reproof highly. Look in Proverbs 17. Proverbs 17, go down to verse 10.
A reproof entereth more into a wise man than 100 stripes into a fool. You can beat a fool to death, and he doesn't get as much as a wise man who receives a good stiff reproof. And he'll take it to heart and do something with it. Right? Look at one more. Proverbs 29. And down in verse 15 it says, "The rod and reproof give wisdom, but a child left to himself bringeth his mother to shame." Now, the problem with Bible believers is sometimes we want to be left alone. You know, the Lord's conviction is uncomfortable, and His hand sometimes is heavy. And so sometimes folks try to, you know, find a place where they can go that where they don't get reproved. But a child left to himself bringeth his mother to shame. The Lord didn't save you to leave you alone. The Lord saved you so you'd grow. And when you're wrong, the Lord corrects you because He loves you. And that correction is a reproof. It's saying you're wrong. Don't do it that way. Do it this way. Right? Now, you know, I know that y'all probably have this straight. I know it's nothing new to you because you come 3 times a week, most of you. And you come and you get, you know, you get fed and you get positive stuff and you get built up and all those things, but you do get reproved often. And I just would like for you to stop and think for a second about the fact that nobody in the world gets that. You are, as far as just Christians that go to this kind of church, you're the only people in the world that get that. Where does the average guy go in your apartment complex or your neighborhood where he gets a balling out once a week? 1 week, you know, one time out of three. He gets a balling out at least once a week. Told he's wrong, being told that he's going to ruin his family if he keeps on this track, and you better stay away from this and you better stay away from that. And you did that wrong, by the way, and you could do it right if you do it this way. Where do you go get that? No place in the world do you go get that. If you go to the Army, okay. But that's not going to help you a lot. The Kiwanis Club, that's not what happens there. Go spend $25,000 a year for a partial college education. See if that's what you get there. That's not what you get there. Where do you get that? You get that here. You get that from the Bible. A prudent man regards reproof. Whereas a lot of folks, when it comes to reproof, they ain't interested. If I have to go and listen to that guy tell me I'm wrong, then, I mean, I wasn't in that door 5 minutes before that redneck told me how to live my life. My response is, I'm sorry it took that long. Because you need to be reproved. We all do. Okay, so he regards reproof. There's just a couple other quick things, and then I'll be shutting her down. Look in Proverbs 19. Proverbs 19. I'm hoping you'll take this home and think about it, and think about the fact that a prudent man gets knowledge, a wise man seeks it. And the fact that that very noble, admirable woman who is wisdom, dwells with prudence. Apparently, prudence has some sway over her, is somehow her superior. And that's what I'm thinking here is the case, is that prudence actually regulates what you do with wisdom, which makes, in a way, prudence more important than the wisdom. Look in chapter 19, verse 14. It says, "House and riches are the inheritance of fathers." It says, "And a prudent wife is from the Lord." Now, that's the prudent wife. The prudent wife is from the Lord. She's a gift. Now, it doesn't say it here, so I am going a little beyond the scriptures here, but you tell me if you think I'm wrong. You think a prudent man may be a gift for some? Would the prudent husband be a gift to the wife? Let me ask you this. Would a prudent friend be a gift from God to you? then why are you bad-mouthing your friends that are here? Some of them are further advanced than you are and have more wisdom, have seen more things than you. Why do you bad-mouth them? Why do you grumble about them and how they failed you in some way? If a prudent wife is from the Lord, perhaps a prudent husband is as well. Perhaps a prudent friend is as well. Perhaps a prudent pastor is as well. Don't worry, I'm not feeling unappreciated. It's not really about me. I'm just saying, I'd like to just say that you might just across the board say that prudence is a gift from God. That prudent people given you that you're gifted with, they're gifts from God. Now there's one last thing here. Look in Proverbs chapter 22. And verse 3. You know the verse. Tom the toad, right? Oh, Tom the toad, oh, Tom the toad, why are you lying on the road? You did not see the car ahead and now you're marked by tire treads. It's Tom the toad. This is the Tom the toad verse. I was going to sing it, but I decided not to. Verse 3, a prudent man foreseeth the evil and hideth himself, as in Tom the toad didn't. Tom the toad got run over and got squashed. But a prudent man foreseeth the evil and hideth himself, but the simple pass on and are punished. That's repeated again in Proverbs 27:12. A prudent man foreseeth the evil and hideth himself, but the simple pass on and are punished. The prudent man foreseeth. I'd like to say that one thing that ought to be a tremendous help to you would be if you got prudence. And don't forget, I said that part of that definition for prudence is sagacity. That is an acuteness of discernment. That is, somebody with prudence can see how things are developing and see where it's going. And if necessary, get out of there or bail out of the conversation. I mean, have you never been in a conversation and because of how the thing's progressing, you know where this is going? And you either try to throw a damp wash rag on it or get out because it's going south fast? That's a smart thing. Foresight. Prudence provides foresight. It allows you to predict how things might go. I'm not suggesting that you become a prophet or some mystical thing like that. I'm suggesting, though, that a lot of times, you spend some time around Brother Peacock, who was a cop for 25 years, and he knows human nature, has seen human nature from a perspective that a lot of us haven't really seen it. And so there are things that he picks up on like that, right? Just the way a guy's acting, just the way a guy's shifty or whatever. And he knows what he's about. Well, that's prudence. It's prudence. And the kind of prudence you need is a holy prudence from the Bible. And it's not just wisdom, because sometimes wisdom still gets drawn off into nonsense. Even though somebody is wise, it doesn't mean that they're always right. But prudence helps to regulate wisdom. It'll help you to regulate what you know so that you can do with what you know the right thing. But prudence foresees. Let's bow our heads and pray.